The progressive development of peoples is an object of deep interest and concern to the Church. This is particularly true in the case of those peoples who are trying to escape the ravages of hunger, poverty, endemic disease, and ignorance. The hungry nations of the world cry out to the peoples blessed with abundance. And the Church, cut to the quick by this cry, asks each and every man to hear his brother's plea and answer it lovingly. So began Pope Paul VI's prophetic encyclical, Populorum Progressio, or On the Development of Peoples, published 40 years ago at Easter 1967. The document was partly the result of the Pope's own travels, a revolutionary idea back then, to Latin America, Africa, India, and the Holy Land. There he saw with his own eyes the grinding poverty, sickness and desperation that contrasted so sharply with the economic progress and fast-growing consumer culture of Western countries. There he saw the urgent need for the Christian message of love, compassion, justice and equality to act as a social conscience and to speak out against the growing gap between rich and poor.
I think that whole sense of a social conscience is really important, and it's really important that churches and faith leaders can speak out on these issues, especially speaking out from the perspective of people who are poorest and marginalised.
Christine Allen is director of the London-based international development charity Progressio, which draws its inspiration from Pope Paul's visionary encyclical. Though it was founded during the Second World War in response to the rise of fascism in Europe, the organisation today focuses on projects with partners across the developing world.
In the 1960s in particular, we developed a very much kind of Africa focus, replacing people to work with local organisations and churches. And that developed into a very professional international volunteering placement. So now we place more than 80 development workers, we don't call them volunteers, to do training, skills development, capacity building with overseas partners in 11 different countries around the world, including mainly Latin America, but Africa and the Middle East as well.
If you look closely at the document Populorum Progressio, Pope Paul VI talks about his own journeys, his own experiences of seeing people in Latin America, Africa, India and the Middle East as part of his inspiration for that document. Do you think it would have been possible for him without this first-hand experience to write that kind of encyclical?
Well, personal contact is very important, and I think we have to remember 40 years ago, the world was quite different in terms of technologies, in terms of people's awareness of what was going on in the world. Today, you know, through the click of a computer screen, we can see, we can be engaged with realities, you know, around the world. And so it is a much quicker and a much more engaging sort of spread of information. Clearly in 1967, that wasn't the issue. You know, people, the flow of information was much slower, and there wasn't that sort of sense of engagement. But at the same time, it comes out very clearly in the document how much the Pope had been moved by his experiences. And we know from our experiences of development workers and our own travel meeting partners that that kind of personal contact is just invaluable. It's immeasurable almost. But at the same time, you know, you don't have to travel around the world to be able to have that kind of contact. And at the end of the day, I think it's about an empathy. It's about a sympathy. It's about a sense of solidarity that's deep within your being, which is quite a gospel sort of thing in the way that Jesus was moved to tears on those sorts of occasions. And so I think, yes, it's very clear that the Pope's real hand experience clearly had an impact, but also I think there was an openness there to being in touch with people and to feeling that common humanity, which perhaps we can find other ways of accessing in today's world.
The Pope also draws on social encyclicals written by his predecessors, doesn't he? But what do you think are perhaps the most innovative parts of Populorum Progressio? Why would you say perhaps it has still such a relevance for us today?
Catholic social teaching is always quite contextual, so what's written in 1967 isn't always relevant 40 years later. But I think one of the interesting things about Populorum Progressio is just actually how relevant and how challenging it still is. And for those people that know about Catholic social teaching, in some respects, the radical nature of church teaching isn't a surprise. But if you haven't come across Catholic social teaching before, which I hate to say, rather too many Catholics haven't, but if you haven't, I mean, reading that document, it's incredibly radical. It's incredibly challenging. I mean, the fact that it talks about a structural analysis to poverty. It talks about a full vision of development, one that includes peace, one that includes cultural self-determination, one that talks about choices, one that talks about people being able to control their own destinies. It's talking about this concept of full humanism, which is about saying everybody should strive to that. You know, Catholics don't have a monopoly. Everybody strives towards that full humanism. And this openness to working with others, I think, is incredibly challenging. Here in the UK at the moment, we're debating about Trident. And, you know, there's an ironic kind of passage in there that actually talks about the Pope seeking a world fund, which will be funded by reductions in military spending. You know, the kind of challenges and debates are extremely radical. It's no wonder the Catholic social teaching is the Church's best-kept secret.
As you say, it contains very many visionary ideas regarding development, regarding even issues like trade justice. And if we look at the movement for fair trade, which has suddenly become very popular and very widespread, but why did it take so long, I suppose the question is, for these ideas to take root?
Well, I think the answer to why it takes so long is linked into what we've just been discussing, which is the radical nature of it. It's an incredibly radical challenge. You know, it's very clear in this document about, you know, a new conscience of our times, you know, that very sense of asking people to think radically and differently about your life. Now, I mean, in some respects, we're probably more aware of poverty and injustice in today's society than perhaps people were in 1967. So, you know, it was going to be even more radical in those times. So I think there is something about, yes, it was ahead of its time. Catholic social teaching has always been a little bit ahead of its time. I mean, Pope Leo XIII in 1891 was talking about the rights of workers when the labour movement was effectively in its infancy. Popular and Progressive doesn't just talk about right trading relationships. He also talks about debts. He talks about reductions in military expenditure and the relationship between development and peace, issues that we're still struggling with, you know, and issues about when you do engage in development partnerships, that you do it with, there's a lovely phrase that when it talks about kind of how people engage with the development process, that they go to serve and to collaborate, not as masters. When experts come with expertise, they must season it with love, you know, and recognizing the challenges that very often that missionary organizations and churches perhaps hadn't always operated in that way, but that's the way in which we should do it.
Across the world, Catholic development agencies are marking the anniversary of Populorum Progressio, stressing the need to put into practice the principles outlined so clearly by Pope Paul VI.
Perhaps this is an occasion to remind as many people as possible that this document existed and it was meant to challenge us to social action, social justice.
Archbishop Ignatius Kaigama heads the Diocese of Jos in northern Nigeria. He's working closely with CAFOD, the Agency for Overseas Development of the Catholic Church in England and Wales, to promote their Live Simply campaign, highlighting the way each one of us can do something to further those goals of justice, equality and peace.
It's meant to be a reminder to wealthier nations to be conscious of the needs of others who are not equally blessed materially, the need for mutual solidarity, for social justice and universal charity. So we continue to tell people as individuals to live simply, then this will extend to the families, to the schools and perhaps to government. And when we begin to be conscious of the needs of others and we try to bridge the gap between the rich and the poor, I think the world would be certainly a better place. There will be less crisis, there will be less violence, and we will all be happy and living together as God's children.
Certainly there is a much greater awareness today, isn't there, about the needs of the continent of Africa. There are many projects, many government goals have been set up to try and to deliver the kind of aid that will help African countries get back on their feet again. And yet somehow this awareness, it seems, doesn't always translate into a real improvement in the lives of people in those countries.
Yeah, a lot is said to be given by foreign governments and international agencies for the alleviation of poverty in Africa. But I'm afraid to say that sometimes these funds are just given without taking care to monitor what the funds are being used for. Every country will quote that in their effort to alleviate poverty, they have given so many million pounds, so many million dollars for this and that. But I want to say there is no adequate monitoring to ensure that these resources are used for the purposes intended. Sometimes this money gets lost among political leaders. And therefore, there is need to do proper follow-up and close monitoring. And if it were possible to channel these funds to agencies that are faith-based, whether they are Christian or Muslim or whatever, it will help a lot. I have benefited immensely from the contributions of CAFOD in the area of primary health care, HIV/AIDS, area of water supply and so on in my archdiocese. And I think if such huge funds were channeled to agencies that would give them out and ensure proper monitoring and get things going, we will go a long way in alleviating poverty. But the funds get lost in government circles, sometimes through corruption and sometimes through reckless use of these funds.
Is corruption still a very big problem there in your native Nigeria?
Definitely, corruption is a problem, and we are trying our best to ensure it's a thing of the past. The President Obasanjo has instituted social reform programs to do away with corruption. It's not an easy battle, but the fact is that it has started, and there is a spreading consciousness that corruption is evil, is criminal, and I think by God's grace, we hope to develop a culture where people are able to consider the common good and work selflessly towards ensuring common good for all.
Give us an idea of the situation in your own diocese. How serious is the problem of poverty there, the problems of water, the things that you're talking about?
Yes, as a pastor, I go around faithfully every weekend to villages where I spend 2 days or so at the weekends, and I see what other politicians would not see because they don't go there anyway in the first place. I stay with the people. I know the kind of water they drink. Sometimes the water you see, you will not even like to wash your hands with, but that is all they get, they have, and that is all they use. And when I visit, like during pastoral work, rather than focus on spiritual matters, people are bringing their social needs. We have no water, we have no school, that child is dying of this and that, and you become like a social worker. And this is what we do. In my office, when I am in office attending to official matters, I have long queues waiting to see me. And what are they looking for? Not simply prayers or counseling. They are looking for basic needs. Water, they are looking for money to buy medicine for that child who is dying, or they want blood transfusion, they don't have the money. And this is all you get. So as a pastor, I see that my people are suffering, and there is a lot that government could do to alleviate this. And I hope we shall be working in partnership with government, and if they listen at all, we will do something together to alleviate poverty.
Christine, the aims of organisations like your own are reflected in the Millennium Development Goals, aren't they? That ambitious list of targets we're trying to reach by the year 2015. Are you still optimistic that we are heading in the right direction?
I am hopeful that some of the goals can be achieved. I mean, they were a very ambitious target, but, you know, ambition is no bad thing. I think the major threat to our world is mediocrity and apathy, not ambition. And in terms of tackling poverty and injustice, we should always strive to be ambitious. And I think there's a lot that churches and faith groups and faith leaders can contribute to that process too. There's a lot that can be done, and there's a lot that is being done. A lot of provision of services is very positive, is very good. And in the same way that Paul VI talked about our recognition of the new social conscience for all, I think the Millennium Development Goals in some respects help to provide something like that new social conscience, both from the Millennium but also from the global call to end poverty in the UK. It's called Make Poverty History. Those sorts of campaigns that are really focused around holding governments to account to make sure that they meet their Millennium Development Goals targets are, I think, in many respects, new social consciences and should be supported by everybody.
And my thanks there to Christine Allen, director of the London-based international development charity Progressio, and to Archbishop Ignatius Ayau Kaigama of the Diocese of Jos in Nigeria.